Hello, you're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to have the courage and to take the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I am Lissa Marquardt. I am a certified career and life coach, and my passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. I am so fortunate. I always seem to get interesting guests for my show simply because they land in my lap. And my guest today is no exception. His name is Norm Brown, and he is a retired FBI special agent. I've always been fascinated by that career, so to be able to have Norm on the show is something I'm very much looking forward to today. We're going to go to break, but when we return, Norm will share his story of how he came to be an agent and a little bit about what that experience is like from the inside out. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Bonner's Ferry Glass has long been the place to go for a multitude of services, including rock chip repair or windshield replacement and lock and key services. Plus, you'll always find a staff of trained professionals at Bonner's Ferry Glass. If you need commercial and or residential doors, windows, garage doors, screen window and door repair, or even custom glass cutting for tabletops or picture frames, they do it all at Bonner's Ferry Glass on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
What's better than the perfect cut of meat for a tasty meal? That's easy. The perfect cut of meat. On sale.
Super One Foods 12-hour meat sale this Thursday only with great savings on USDA Choice Angus Beef New York Steak, $6.98 a pound. Limit two packages. Jennie-O Bone-In Turkey Breast, $1.98 a pound. Prairie Fresh Boneless Pork Loin Roast, $1.98 a pound.
Super One Foods 12-hour meat sale this Thursday only. The savings are sizzling.
Have you thought about a new and improved low-maintenance metal roof? Badger Building Center has the industry's absolute best Fabrol metal roofing with the absolute best prices around. Fabrol metal roofing comes in 20 different color options, has a 40-year warranty, and will give your home, pool building, or shed the protection you're looking for. Visit Badger Building Center in Post Falls, Sagal, Bonner's Ferry, or Kalispell for all your Fabrol metal roofing needs. Or visit them online for a free quote at badgerbuilding.com. That's badgerbuilding.com.
I have Newt and Toa Frog.
Dead Man's Moss from Fallen Log.
Briar Thorns from Deep in the Thicket.
Bring good luck on my scratch ticket.
Wait, what?
About that, since we're brewing a potion for good luck.
We need luck to avoid being burned alive by the villagers.
Yeah, but
not for winning Idaho Lottery scratch tickets. Oh, these are scary fun.
Right?
And we could win up to 100 grand. Quick, wing a bat from last night's dinner.
Turn this scratch ticket into a winner.
Benefiting Idaho public schools and buildings. Must be 18 or older. Play wise.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Details on example rate at selectquote.com.
97.1 FM is North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to have the courage and to take the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I am Lissa Marquardt, and my guest today is Norm Brown. Norm is a retired FBI special agent, and I got to meet Norm through a friend of mine. And as soon as I found out what he did, I couldn't wait to ask him to be on the show. And thankfully, when I asked him, he said yes. So welcome, Norm. So happy to have you here today.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
So great. I think part of my fascination about FBI is that I think that it's one of those careers that when you're younger, you think of it almost as kind of like being a superhero in the real world. And, you know, all those imaginative stories that you can come up with about what really goes on, because we don't really get into that life so much. We just kind of see it glamorized on TV shows and movies and things like that. So I just think it's going to be really fun to find out, well, what's it really like? And so I guess the best place to start is, how old were you? When did you kind of know that you had an interest along these lines? I know you didn't jump right into the FBI, but where did the, you know, the glimmer of that show up for you in your life?
Sure, Lisa. Believe it or not, when I was in third or fourth grade, I had a buddy of mine, actually my best friend, whose father was a police officer. And I was intrigued by him. He would let me sit in the police car, turn on the lights, turn on the siren. I was pretty impressed. He would tell me about his daily in and out activities on patrol. So that piqued my interest right away at a very young age.
Sure.
It never left me. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I realized I wanted to go in law enforcement as a career for life. So I attended Washington State University, which had a great program in criminal justice. I graduated from there and went to work for the Spokane County Sheriff's Office and was a deputy for 4 years. By the time I reached nearly my fifth year, I met an FBI agent who told me that I was actually eligible to take the FBI test. So I took the test and felt I didn't do very well, when in fact I came out in the top 2%.
Wow.
Yeah, I surprised myself. Got a little lucky there. But anyway, so I was single, had never been married, hadn't traveled much, and knowing a career in the FBI was going to take me different places. So I, as I said, I scored high. I went back to the FBI Academy, which is in Quantico, Virginia, and 15 weeks later, I graduated.
Wow.
So one thing they promised all new agents at the FBI Academy is you will not be transferred back to your home state. So I wasn't transferred back to my home state, but I was transferred to Idaho, which was pretty close.
Right across the border.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, so when you were given this suggestion to go ahead and test for the FBI, it's like, did you really know what you were getting yourself into? Did you have kind of a fascination to elevate in what you were doing from being in the sheriff's department? Or was it just kind of, as we were talking about previously, it was just like, well, here's a carrot and they're just going to, you know, like dangle it in front of me and it's a promotion, so I'll go for it?
Not exactly. I was very happy to be with the Spokane County Sheriff's Office. My ultimate goal was to be a homicide investigator with the Sheriff's Office. I never got to that point because I joined the FBI before had that opportunity. So in a sense, I really didn't know what I was getting into. Okay. I knew it was allegedly a step up. Some would disagree. But again, I was pretty green in that I hadn't traveled much, and I knew that I had an opportunity to really broaden my horizons, and that's what I wanted to do.
So you traveled all the way to Coeur
d'Alene. Yeah, Coeur d'Alene, 30 miles away. Right.
Well, but you got to go to Quantico as well.
Yes.
And see, to me, that is, to me, Quantico is such a land of intelligence and things that commoners don't know anything about. I don't know if that's just a, you know, something I've made up in my head, but I just feel like there's so many things that you might have gotten exposed to as far as, you know, everything that is kind of something that the public doesn't necessarily know about.
Right. The FBI Academy is about 35 miles south of Washington, D.C. It's on the U.S. Marine Corps base there at Quantico. So we actually do not own the land itself. The federal government does. It's the military that honors our being there, and we get along very well with the Marine Corps. But while we're there, it's 15 weeks of training. They concentrate on three different areas, firearms training, classroom training where you learn different federal laws, how to investigate federal crimes, And then finally, physical fitness as well. Mm. I was prepared in two areas because I was a deputy sheriff, so I knew how to handle a gun. I also was in good shape, physical fitness wise. When I realized I was going to take the FBI test, I really worked my tail off, and so I surprised myself and was scored number one in my class.
Wow.
But I think that was out of fear than anything else. I didn't want to flunk out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
And one of the things I learned right away at the academy was that the FBI has so many different violations that we investigate. I had no idea how many there were, but the FBI investigates domestic terrorism, international terrorism, cybercrime, the spy side of the house, which is counterintelligence, civil rights investigations, public corruptions, weapons of mass destructions, organized crime, violent crime, and the list goes on from there.
Right.
When you first get sent to your office, you don't know what type of crime you'll be investigating. You can put in a request, but generally that is overruled by the special agent in charge in that office.
So pick one you don't want. Right?
That's right. Yeah. It's just like some of the agents in New Orleans training you would get a chance to put down one of your top 10 choices of what cities you wanted to go to. Well, some of them would put down ones they didn't want to go to, hoping that they would not go there.
Sure, I get that.
One guarantee was if you wanted to go to New York City right out of Quantico, you could go.
I bet.
Not many agents really wanted to go to New York, except for agents that were from there.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. And when you had these 15 weeks of training, then were you trained in all those areas?
Briefly, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Really, the training actually occurred in the field once you graduated.
Okay.
You became ultimately familiar with the investigations or the area that you were assigned to, and you would be assigned a senior agent to kind of hold your hand through the first couple of months of the investigations.
That makes total sense. So they just basically dipped your toe in it to find out what maybe your skill sets might be or what your interests might be and, you know, your proclivity for succeeding in that area.
Very true. Many former police officers that got in the FBI would be assigned to a violent crime squad, which made a lot of sense. Sometimes they would be assigned to counterintelligence, which is the spy side of the house, and they would have no idea what they're doing there.
Right.
But eventually you learn fast and then just acclimate to what you're faced with.
Right. Well, and so how did you feel about all the different areas? I mean, was it a little bit mind-boggling, or did you like find that there were several that you were really interested in, or, you know, how did that play? Were you surprised by what you were learning?
Sure. I was assigned to what's called a resident agency, and in a resident agency, it's a small office where you literally are responsible for investigating anything that comes across your desk. And you could not specialize in one area.
Wow.
I worked domestic terrorism. I worked violent crime. I worked white-collar crime, fraud. And I was assigned to work a major case in the Bureau at that time, too. So I had my hands full.
Yeah. And how did that feel? I mean, was it overwhelming? Was it daunting? Or did things just kind of fall into place?
It was overwhelming. I worked about 12 hours a day, at least 6 days a week.
Wow.
And it was very trying, but I realized that this wouldn't go on forever. Mm-hmm. So I just stuck with it.
Right. And so, like, along the way, did you get, like, particular pieces of advice? Like, you should go this direction, you should not go this direction. I mean, was there some kind of guidance or somebody kind of helping steer your path for you?
Well, I should back up and say that my parents supported me by going into a law enforcement career. Mm-hmm. But my dad did warn me. I remember sitting down in his office one day, and he just said, "So you want to go into law enforcement?" I said, "I sure do, Dad." He says, "Well, that's fine. It's an honorable career. But I want you to realize that it can be dangerous. You'll be working some odd hours. You'll be working different days. You probably won't have weekends off. He kind of opened my eyes to that, but I was so set and determined to enter law enforcement that I decided that this is what I wanted to do. And then when it came to my mother, she was, of course, worried about me.
Sure, of course. That's what we do.
That's right.
Yeah, and but did she give you her blessings anyway?
She did, yeah. She didn't have much choice.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things. It's like if you've got it figured out, you got to go for it.
Right. And they were very proud of me and my career. In fact, they traveled from Spokane to Quantico, Virginia for my graduation.
Nice.
And I still have pictures of them with me holding my new credentials. And yeah, they were very happy for me.
I love that. So I guess the one thing that comes to mind for me, both as a parent and as a person, is how did you feel going into law enforcement about dealing with death and, you know, just the different ways that people think about things in life? I mean, was that something that you kind of mentally prepared for ahead of time?
It was. As a deputy sheriff, I had already been accustomed seeing death, unfortunately. I'd seen some pretty serious gunshot wounds and deaths, suicides. At times, it was rather sickening. But you get hardened to that over time. And joining the Bureau, there was less of that. As a deputy sheriff, I never knew where my next danger was coming from.
Right.
Or when it was coming. So in the FBI, we generally had the element of surprise and organization if we're going to make a high-risk arrest.
Right.
On the street, as a patrol officer, you generally don't have that in your back pocket.
Yeah, that's true. And how do they mentally prepare you for that?
Really, you have to be mentally prepared yourself. Okay. They'll tell you this is what you will face. Be prepared for that. Be prepared to use deadly force if necessary. However, try to use the least amount of force necessary to effect an arrest.
Sure, sure. And is there, like, do they put you through, like, any kind of testing to see if you're cut out for that kind of work? Or is there...
Yes,
along. Way of measuring that?
Yes, there is a way of measuring it. I don't know how they do that, but we took a number of psychological exams, which could, but rather hardly ever would cause us to drop out of the academy or be booted out of the academy.
I would imagine that. Yeah, again, there's got to be that awareness of the direction you're heading. It's not like you're going to escape that by any means when you enter into that kind of a career. But I just also kind of wonder if sometimes there isn't that heroic side of an individual that would apply for or want to be in that kind of a field that maybe they never really stop to consider what that would feel like in real life.
Sure. As I said, all law enforcement officers know that it can be a dangerous occupation, and we don't do it for the money because there aren't many police officers or FBI agents out there that are millionaires.
No, exactly.
You do it for a sense of duty. In my case, probably the greatest feeling I would get is when I could help a victim of crime essentially get retribution. In other words, the bad guy goes to jail, and the victim is therefore somewhat set free, at least a little bit.
I love that. That's a great way of putting it. So that sounds like an extremely motivating way to enter into a career and different situations that arise along the way.
Right.
Great. Well, it's time for us to go to break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Now's the time to get your seasonal flu vaccine at Sandpoint Superdrug. They're in stock now. They offer the quadrivalent flu vaccine for everyone, including high-dose quadrivalent for seniors over the age of 65. It's no charge deal with most insurance companies and only $30 if no insurance. Sandpoint Superdrug is more than an independent pharmacy. They're family-owned and operated with an eclectic selection to meet all your home and health needs. Located on 5th Avenue, stop in today.
You're definitely going to need a bigger wallet, because this fall you can win big at the Kootenai Casino in Bonner's Ferry. Qualify to win with weekly hot spins, or join us every Friday or Saturday for our weekend super spins. You could walk away with a ton of cash. Room rates are just $99 a night midweek for the Kootenai Falls Lodge, or just $119 for a Riverview room. The Springs is featuring four throwback dinner specials, each priced $13. Spaghetti and meatballs, Idaho trout, meatloaf, and stir fry, all backed by popular demand for a limited time. And this October in the Kootenai Spa, you'll find a relaxing anti-stress facial and 30-minute stone massage for just $115. Or how about a 50-minute warm stone massage and chocolate facial for just $169? So buy yourself a bigger wallet, a bigger purse, or heck, just bring a suitcase for the cash, because you're going to need it at the Kootenai Casino in Bonner's Ferry. Book your winning fall getaway by calling 888-YOU-ARE-LUCKY or visit KootenaiRiverInn.com. Room specials based on availability.
Hi, it's Lenny from 7BTV, your Dish premier local retailer. Upgrade to Dish from DirecTV and get a $300 prepaid MasterCard. Just mention offer code DTV2DISH. Come in or call us today at 208-263-7288 to learn more and make the switch to Dish. That's 208-263-7288. Offer ends October 11th, 2023. Eligibility requirements and restrictions apply. Call for full details.
And paid for by Linear Marketing Group. Are you drowning in debt? Are you struggling to make minimum payments? Did you know that on average, a household with at least one credit card struggles with over $17,000 in credit card debt? If this sounds like you, know that it's not your fault. Credit card debt happens to good people. Credit card companies lure you in with low introductory rates and low minimum payments. Before you know it, you're in over your head. We've helped thousands of good people just like you become debt-free with our debt reset program that will dramatically reduce your debt down to a fraction of what you owe. Our debt reset program is customized to get you debt-free in as little as 24 to 48 months with one low monthly payment. If you owe over $10,000 in credit card debt or even personal loans, call 800-278-0630 now. There are no upfront fees or out-of-pocket expenses. You don't pay a dime until we succeed. Call now to see how the debt reset program can work for you. 800-278-0630. That's 800-278-0630. Again, 800-278-0630.
Listen live anytime, anywhere with our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to have the courage and to take the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I am Melissa Marquardt, and my guest today is Norm Brown. He is a retired FBI special agent, and we have been talking about his career journey and some of the training that's been involved in that. And before we started the show today, I was talking to Norm about part of my motivation for doing this show is that I just love to be able to expose my audience to what do some careers look like from the inside out, because it's very easy to look at careers and kind of fantasize about what they're really like or you know, not really get the whole picture. And I'd love to be able to have somebody that's actually walked the walk that can share that with us. And so I always just have the feeling that there's somebody out there that wants to know more about whatever it is, the career that I'm talking about at the moment. And so if there's that somebody out there right now, Norm, if there was kind of that dream job for someone that's been in the FBI in one capacity or another, like what are some of the qualities or characteristics that you think are kind of innate to that person or something that they would, you know, hopefully be able to strive towards?
Sure. To answer your question, everyone knows that the FBI stands for Federal Bureau of Investigation. Right. Once we get to the academy as a new agent, you also learn that it means fidelity, bravery, and integrity. Wow. So that. One thing that we learn early on is that we need to depend upon each other as agents and as family members, so to speak. We also have to be brave in terms of facing danger at times. Fortunately, it's rare that that happens, but when high-risk arrests occur, we have to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And then integrity, we have to be honest. even if we know that there are cases where we know someone has probably committed a crime or is guilty, mm-hmm. but if we don't have the proof, then we can't put them in prison or prosecute them or jail them because it's not the right thing to do. Right. I would much rather let a guilty person go than put an innocent person in jail.
That's such a good point.
And that's what we were taught. I had a bank robbery case early on in my career where this individual walked into the bank, handed the teller a note, and said, "I have a gun. Hand over your 100s and 20s. No die packs, no marked bills." I had a pretty good picture of him, but he did have a hat and sunglasses on, so it made identification of him rather difficult. Eventually, through tips, I identified him as a subject of my investigation. I went out to his house one day. He was living with his mother. Started talking to him, and his mother interjected. I really didn't want her in the room, but since I was in their house, I couldn't do anything about that. She claimed he was innocent. He claimed he was innocent. I asked for permission to search his bedroom, and he surprisingly gave me permission. So he and I went into the bedroom there, and I went through a few of his drawers, and lo and behold, I found a cutout article from a newspaper about the robbery that I suspected he had committed. I asked him about that. He just said that he cut out articles of interest to him in the newspaper. I didn't buy that, didn't believe it, but that was as far as I could get in terms of evidence against him. Mm. In my mind, I was convinced that he was the robber of that bank, but I was never able to pursue it. So
interesting.
But that's how it goes sometimes in the justice system.
You,
if you don't have enough evidence, then you can't be charged.
Interesting. And so he only had that one article. So that was,
that's right.
Was kind of a coincidence.
Right. We had no bills. We had no fingerprints and a picture that may or may not be him.
Mm-hmm. And was it your gut feeling that kind of made you feel like it was definitely him? Was it? I mean,
very much so. Okay. I mean, how many people cut out articles about bank robberies who aren't involved in it?
Yes, exactly. But so, and how much does intuition kind of play into that career?
Intuition, and more importantly, it's even experience. Mm-hmm. When I first started as a deputy sheriff, I was really, really green. I was naive. I believed pretty much everything someone would tell me on the street, even when I pulled people over for traffic infractions. And I learned rather quickly that oftentimes people aren't honest.
Imagine that, especially when a ticket's involved.
Yes.
Or something worse.
I did have a soft heart, and I really didn't join law enforcement to give people tickets. That wasn't my purpose. But if they were driving dangerously or impeding traffic, I would occasionally pull them over. I didn't do radar much at all.
Right. And so as time went by, you just kind of inherently learned how to read people differently or better?
Absolutely, yeah. By the time I became an FBI agent, I realized that oftentimes you will be lied to. That doesn't mean everybody's lying to you.
Right.
But you should take things with a grain of salt.
Yeah. And so I was wondering, is that something that's part of training, either in law enforcement or in FBI, is like how to read people's body language, inflections, things like that? Is that part of what you guys learn?
Yes, absolutely. At Quantico, we practice interviewing techniques. It was an entire course block. And it was very helpful because a lot of the responsibility of FBI agents is to conduct investigations, which included interviews. Mm-hmm. You had to learn how to read people. Generally, it's fairly easy to determine if someone's telling the truth to you. Oftentimes, if they're not giving you eye contact or if they're fidgety, then they're probably not being honest with you and straightforward. One thing what you want to do, obviously, is get a confession if they're guilty. And one way to do that is to be sympathetic to their cause. In other words, you need to tell them that you understand why and how they did this. And that if you were in their shoes, you might have done the same thing.
Mm. Interesting.
And you could even go so low as to sympathize with a child molester and say, you know, that girl, you know, she's pretty cute. She's young, but she's cute. I can kind of understand why you'd do that. And the only reason you'd say that is to try to get confession. You know, down deep, you're like sick to your stomach.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
You want to get their confession or their cooperation.
Yeah.
So, and it worked quite often.
Exactly. Well, and I love it. I think the first time we spoke, you were sharing a little bit about your wife and
yes.
her and her somewhat unique way of getting information out of.
Yeah, my wife worked for the most part counterintelligence, which is the spy stuff, but she also worked white collar crime, fraud on the internet and bank fraud. She had a knack for making grown men cry. And she was really good at interrogation. Not on me. I wouldn't allow it.
You would never allow that, right?
Right. But even though she didn't work violent crime, the agents in the office knew her reputation as a person who could get out the truth.
Nice.
And when the bank robbery squad would arrest a bank robber, instead of interrogating themselves, they would have one of them and my wife beside that agent doing the investigation and the interrogation. And invariably, she would get a confession.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And some tears.
And so was that just her personality or was that the way she was trained?
It was the way she's trained.
Okay.
She looks more like a kindergarten teacher.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And are there a lot of women in the FBI now that are, I mean, is that a career field that is pretty balanced?
Not balanced yet, but it's headed that way. When I went through the academy, there were 40 of us and 8 were women. It's increased.
Oh.
Yeah, it's increased since then. But under J. Edgar Hoover, the original director of the FBI, there were no women allowed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was just him. After he passed away, shortly after, they started recruiting women. And so I'm guessing that it's somewhere around 20% now.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more.
Great. Well, you know, and I think your wife is kind of a great testimony to, you know, how you need a little bit of different qualities and personalities to be able to maybe get to somebody in their confession.
Right. It takes all types, and no one would suspect this little gal, sweet person, would make these people confess.
Yeah.
And I think they eventually were surprised and maybe felt guilty because this woman is harping at the truth, and eventually they just crack.
You know, and I have to say, I wonder if some of them didn't feel just a little bit of a sense of relief, like, okay, she got it out of me. It's out. I can just deal with it now, because I can't imagine that harboring things like that for a long period of time can feel good, regardless of your reason for why you do it.
Yes, absolutely. There's no doubt a number of these people who confessed were relieved to get it out of them.
Interesting.
And you can see it. They just give up, and they'll start slumping, and again, some of them will just start crying because they've been holding it in, and it's just too painful for them.
So interesting. Anyways, great information. It's time for us to go to another break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready for cooler weather ahead? At ProX Home Center, they'll help you turn up the heat with hot deals on a wide array of electric and infrared portable heaters. Also, check out their wood-burning stove, stovepipe, and accessories like insulation, pipe wrap, heat tape, roof heat cables, and so much more. ProX sells and delivers North Idaho Energy logs and pellets. Save big by the pallet or their exclusive second sacks. Call for pricing and details. ProX Home Center, your hometown everything store.
Sun Rental Center has been consistently reliable since 1979. Whether you're a large contractor or a homeowner with an important project, Sun Rental Center is your number one call for equipment rental and services. They go the extra mile, offering hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, and longer rental options with industry-standard products from John Deere, Doosan, Genie, JLG, Multiquip, Ditch Witch, Makita, Honda, Steel, and more. Sun Rental Center is open in Sandpoint Monday through Saturday from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Details on example rate at selectquote.com.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Details on example rate at selectquote.com.
North Idaho's radio, 1400, 1450 AM and 97.1 FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to have the courage and to take the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I am Liz Marquardt, and I am a certified career and life coach. And my guest today is Norm Brown. He is a retired FBI special agent. And we just have one more segment left. And what I'd love to hear about is, you know, what were some of your assignments that you especially loved participating in and being a part of?
Sure, Lisa. I had several assignments during my 25-year career, and I enjoyed working for the FBI. I would do it all over again if I were afforded the opportunity. But a couple of those assignments stand out. One of them was that I was assigned to the FBI Director's Security Detail. You know that the Secret Service protects the President of the United States. Well, the FBI protects the Director of the FBI. So we take care of our Director, and I was one of the few that got selected to do that for about 2 years. At the time, the Director was William Sessions. He was a gentleman all the way through, a kind man, a former federal judge. He liked to travel, though, quite a bit. So in less than 2 years, I traveled 25 states, so half of the U.S.,
wow.
Also seven foreign countries, including Europe and Asia.
Well, you wanted to travel.
I did. I got to travel a lot.
Yes, you did.
In a short period of time.
Yep.
He liked to travel first class, but not at the taxpayer's dime. Hmm. We would occasionally get bumped up to first class just because of who he was, but it wouldn't cost anything. So if he traveled in first class, I travel in first class.
Not bad.
Right. I remember flying back to the U.S., Detroit specifically from Japan one time, It was about a 12-hour flight. I was armed, and so I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't drink alcohol, of course. But here
two,
it was.
Two good combinations, right. Being armed, yes.
Yeah, and there I was with the director, and he was snoring away, and I had to sit there and read.
And stay awake.
Yes, exactly. And, I don't know if you've been on a 12-hour flight before. Oof. Staying awake is difficult.
It's challenging, yes.
Yeah, I stood up a lot. The flight attendants at the end of the flight felt sorry for me, so they gave me a bottle of champagne as I
deported the plane. Go drink this now.
Right. But he also, actually it was his wife, Alice Sessions, who liked to go out during the week in Washington, D.C. She was very social, and it showed. So three nights during the week, we would go to embassies or dignitaries' houses or famous people's houses. And we even went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner a few times.
Nice.
And we would get to see celebrities. We would get to see cabinet members. I remember going to the White House and seeing George Bush and Dick Cheney, movie stars,
wow.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Deborah Norville, all these big names. And it was really fabulous to see, hey, these people are human too.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. No kidding.
But he kept us hopping. Actually, his wife kept us hopping.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
She early on, we had to straighten her out, though, and she tried to have his detail, carry her luggage. We had to explain to her that wasn't our job.
She
gracefully accepted that.
I love that. Well, and so were you like given guidelines on how to behave, how to talk to people? I mean, was that part of it too, or did you just get to be who you are?
No, we were always in coat and tie. It was pretty formal.
Yeah.
We didn't try to be buddies with anybody.
Okay.
We had a job to do, and that was to protect the director of the FBI.
Yeah.
But you realize early on what you should do and what you shouldn't do in terms of common sense and politeness.
Sure.
Obviously, the people realized we were there to protect the director, and they wouldn't typically engage us in conversation because they knew we couldn't really talk to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Another job that I really enjoyed was I was assigned to a surveillance squad in Seattle, and I eventually became the team leader of that squad. There's six of us, and it was our job to follow suspected criminals and get enough evidence so that the case agent could actually file paperwork and get an arrest warrant for them. We were driving cars that obviously didn't look like government cars, driving beaters or trucks.
Yeah.
A few dents here and there. We would wear wigs if necessary or facial hair that wasn't ours. Some of the guys did wear or grow their hair out long, and some of them had earrings and other jewelry.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a cat and mouse game.
Sure.
And generally, we were very successful at that, but occasionally we'd get burned, and we'd learn our lesson from that. But we had much more success than disappointment.
Nice.
I remember I was working a bank robbery case, and we were following this guy that we suspected was a bank robber. And we call him the Abe Lincoln bank robber because when he would rob a bank, he would dress up and look like Abe Lincoln.
Wow.
So we're sitting outside his house one day, and he walks out and gets into a cab. So we follow the cab for about 3 miles. He stops, gets out, pays the cab driver, and then he starts walking away. So I said, I'll stop the cab driver to my crew, and I said, follow this guy. So they continue to follow him. He got in a different car, and they still followed him by car now instead of on foot. I pulled over the cab driver, showed him my credentials, and told him that we're conducting an official investigation. I said, how did that guy pay you? He said, well, he gave me this $20 bill. I said, may I see it, please?
Mm-hmm.
He handed me the $20 bill. I went back to my car and had the serial number checked, and lo and behold, it was a bait bill. In other words, it was taken during the bank robbery, And they knew that bank tellers quite often will have a packet of what's called bait bills. In other words, the serial numbers are pre-recorded. So when they get robbed, they hand that packet as well as other money. And there are pre-recorded bills there that can be traced back to that specific bank. Okay. So I looked at that. They said, yes, it's a bait bill. And I radioed the guys. I said, all right. You have probable cause to arrest this individual.
Perfect.
So it was a great day. Those type of cases really made the work fun and worthwhile.
I love that. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was just running through my mind. Is there like, and maybe you've already mentioned them, but like a particular case or instance where you particularly felt like a hero in a situation?
You know, that's
that you can mention.
Yeah. Actually, it dates back to when I was FBI agent, relatively new, and there was a murder for hire case. It had international connections in that the money was wired from Canada to Spokane. Uh-huh. So there is an individual who lived in the Spokane Valley, he and his wife, an elderly couple, and then there's another person that wanted him shot and killed. So the bad guys got together, there's a hitman, and then there's a guy who hired the hitman. So the guy who hired the hitman got $20,000 wired from Canada to do this job. So he hired the hitman. Both of them were nicknamed Red, by the way, because they both had red hair. So when you said Red, we didn't know which Red you're talking about. You'd have to specify Red 1 or Red 2.
Right.
So the hitman went into the home in the Spokane Valley, and the poor victim heard him come in. So the victim got a gun off the top of his refrigerator, and the hitman and the victim shot at each other.
Well.
The victim was shot in the stomach, almost lost his life, but eventually survived. He did kill the hitman, though. So the family, particularly the wife and the children, were very happy when we finally put this case together. It took a long time to do it. I had a lot of help from the Spokane County Sheriff's Office. In fact, they prosecuted this individual first, who hired the hitman. But then we realized there are international connections, so we did federally as well. Okay. He ended up getting 17 years, but he eventually got out. But the bottom line is the family was so happy and grateful that we, the FBI, conducted this investigation and put him away for quite a while. It made me feel good.
Oh, I think that's awesome. And, you know, again, it's time for us to wrap up, but I just want to say thank you so much for, like, shedding what it's like on the inside out. I mean, it's like it's all about movie stuff to me and maybe the audience as well. And so thank you for sharing your perceptions and your experiences. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome, Lisa. Yes. I did live my dream.
Yes. Awesome. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening in. Be sure and listen in again next month. And in the meantime, remember, now is your life. Get out there and really live it.